Good morning. My name is Dawn, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the DuPont Quarterly Investor Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer period. If you would like to pose a question at that time, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. In the interest of time, management requests that you limit yourself to one question and one follow-up question, and please pick up your handset to allow optimal sound quality. If you have additional questions, you may re-enter the queue. Thank you. It is now my pleasure to turn the call over to your host, Carol Lukach, Vice President of Investor Relations. Carol, you may begin your conference.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us to cover DuPont's third quarter 2013 performance. Joining me are Ellen Kullman, Chair and CEO, and Nick Benedicus, Executive Vice President and CFO. The slides for today's presentation can be found on our website, along with our news release. Please note that we also posted our third quarter segment performance slides and outlook commentary this morning. During the course of this conference call, we will make forward-looking statements, and I direct you to slide two for our disclaimers. All statements that address expectations or projections about the future are forward-looking statements. Although they reflect our current expectations, these statements are not guarantees of future performance but involve a number of risks and assumptions. We urge you to review DuPont's SEC filings for a discussion of some of the factors that could cause actual results to differ materially. We will also refer to non-GAAP measures and request that you review the reconciliations to GAAP statements provided with our earnings news release and on our website. For today's agenda, Ellen will start with opening comments. Nick will review our third quarter financial performance and near-term outlook, and I'll provide business segment insights. We'll conclude with Ellen's comments, followed by your questions. With that introduction, it's now my pleasure to turn the call over to Ellen.
Great. Thank you, Carl, and good morning, everyone, and thank you for joining us. I'm pleased to begin today by highlighting DuPont's third quarter performance. Our segment results were generally in line with our July expectations. Double-digit earnings improvements from Performance Materials, Electronics and Communications, Safety and Protection, and Industrial Biosciences, paired with ongoing productivity initiatives across the company, helped to offset the expected earnings decline from our Performance Chemicals segment. Operating earnings of $0.45 per share were above our guidance due to a one-point reduction in the annual tax rate, gains related to our Pinar acquisition, and a joint venture asset, both of which we expected in the fourth quarter. However, the strength of the dollar was a greater headwind than we expected. As a result, we realized a higher portion of the second half operating earnings in the third quarter than the 40% we anticipated in July. Third quarter net sales of $7.7 billion increased 5%, largely due to 9% higher volumes versus a weak prior year. As you may recall, one of DuPont's three operating priorities is to drive growth in developing markets. Against that metric, we delivered solid third quarter results. In developing Asia, we increased sales by 14% compared to last year's difficult economic environment. Our investments in research and development and market-facing resources continue to pay strong dividends. To illustrate that point, our Performance Materials business delivered 29% higher automotive sales volumes in China this quarter. This progress was due in part to insights from our innovation centers, our local application development capability, and our customer-focused teams. We also delivered a 24% revenue increase in developing Europe, Middle East, and Africa, which was broad-based and aided by the acquisition of a controlling interest in Pinar Seed in Africa. This acquisition is another positive step to enhance agricultural productivity and improve food security while accelerating the development of higher-performing products for Africa's farmers. Looking more broadly, the macroeconomic environment, and in particular global industrial production, is improving sequentially, but at a slower pace than we expected 3 months ago. As a result, we recently lowered our global industrial production outlook for 2013 from 2.5% growth to slightly under 2%. Despite the slow growth macroeconomic environment, we continue to capitalize on our unique scientific capabilities to develop differentiated high-value solutions that respond to growing global market demands. In summary, our strong and diverse global footprint positioned us well to deliver strong volume growth compared to last year, and we are executing well against our strategic and operating priorities. Nick will now explain in more detail our third quarter financial performance and our outlook for the remainder of the year. Nick?
Thank you, Ellen, and good morning, everyone. Let's start with the details of the quarter on slide 3. Our operating earnings for the third quarter were 45 cents per share, slightly better than expectations and 2 cents better than 2012. The improvement primarily reflects the acceleration of two events which were expected to occur in the fourth quarter of this year: an equity remeasurement gain related to the Pinar acquisition of about 3 cents per share, and a benefit of about 2 cents per share relating to an asset revaluation in a joint venture. These positive items, along with the benefit of a 1-point reduction in our full-year base tax rate, were somewhat tempered by a stronger U.S. dollar and the anticipated lower performance chemicals operating earnings of about 13 cents per share. The lower performance chemical earnings are largely due to the decline in global TiO2 prices versus prior year. We are seeing clear signs that this market has stabilized, and we are encouraged by the improving industry fundamentals. Consolidated net sales of $7.7 billion increased 5% versus the prior year. Volume increased 9%, led by our electronics and communications, performance chemicals, and agricultural segments, which each had double-digit volume growth versus a weak third quarter last year. On a sequential basis, volumes were up only slightly compared with the second quarter. Local selling prices declined 3%, primarily due to lower TiO2 and fluoroproduct prices and lower pass-through of precious metal costs in electronics and communications, partially offset by innovation-driven price increases in our agricultural segment. Currency also had a negative 1% impact on our top line as the dollar continued to strengthen against most currencies, particularly the Brazilian real, Japanese yen, and the Indian rupee, partially offset by a weaker dollar versus the euro. For the full year, we now expect a negative 18-cent currency impact. This is higher than our previous outlook of 12 to 14 cents because, during the year, the dollar has strengthened considerably versus every key currency except the euro. In addition to our business performance, our base tax rate for the quarter was 7 points lower than last year, contributing 4 cents to operating EPS. For the full year, we now expect a base tax rate of about 22%. Now let's turn to slide 4 for more information regarding the company sales by geographic region. In every region of the world, we had increased sales volumes. However, lower local prices were an offsetting factor. The decline in prices in the quarter generally reflected the impact of our performance chemicals businesses in the regions, particularly in developed Asia. Our growth in developing EMEA reflects our acquisition of controlling interest in Pinar Seed, which significantly increased our footprint in South Africa during the quarter. In the second quarter earnings call, we communicated our expectations that industrial markets would gradually recover. As Ellen noted, we still expect to see industrial production improvements, but they're coming at a slower pace. In the third quarter, we saw growth in Europe and Japan after 2011 and 2012 recessions, and we saw some positive signs of growth in China. Overall, we see the global economy improving, but slowly. Now let's take a deeper look into our operating earnings for the third quarter. Slide 5 provides a segment operating earnings variance analysis. From this waterfall chart, you can see clearly the large impact the decline in Performance Chemicals segment earnings had on our overall earnings compared to last year. Operating earnings for Performance Chemicals declined $159 million this quarter. The 13-cent per share hurt was in line with our expectations. Performance Materials, Electronics and Communications, Safety and Protection, and Industrial Biosciences each had strong performance and double-digit percent growth versus the prior year, offsetting much of the decline in Performance Chemicals segment earnings. Carl will cover more of our operating segment results in a few minutes. Moving to slide 6, in total, segment earnings were down 5 cents per share. Segment results include the Performance Chemicals decline we just covered, and they also include 4 cents hurt due to currency, which was higher than we anticipated. A change in the base tax rate expectation for the full year also provided a 4-cent benefit in the quarter. The 1-cent benefit from lower corporate expenses that you see on slide 6 reflects this quarter's savings from cost control in our business support functions and the restructuring program we announced last year. We are on track to deliver the $300 million in savings we targeted for 2013. Beyond this restructuring program, we continue to execute ongoing cost productivity initiatives throughout all of our businesses. We are well on our way to delivering on our commitment of more than $300 million for the full year from these initiatives. In total, both initiatives will contribute significantly to offsetting inflation and helping to fund our growth investments. Now turning to the balance sheet and cash on slide 7. Our current free cash flow is about $2 billion greater use of cash versus the prior year. As you know, cash flows are highly seasonal from our growing ag segment, and with sales up more than $1 billion in the segment this year, cash and working capital investments have increased to support that growth year over year. The timing of production grower compensation payments, which reflected higher contract commodity prices from last year, and the timing of customer prepayments contributed to the working capital increases. The decline in Performance Chemicals earnings also had a negative impact on free cash flow versus last year. Before I close, let me offer a few insights regarding our balance sheet and pensions. First, a reminder, maintaining a strong balance sheet that provides the financial flexibility to fund ongoing operations and compelling growth opportunities remains a key priority for DuPont. Second, our current unfunded pension balance is declining. Given today's rising interest rate environment, and if all other pension-related variables were to remain constant, our unfunded pension liability should decline significantly by about $2 to $3 billion by year-end. In summary, third quarter results were in line with our expectations, and our lower base tax rate offset the currency headwinds. With these results, we are today reaffirming our full-year outlook of $3.85 per share. We expect an improved fourth quarter compared to last year's weak operating results, and also anticipate that our ag segment will have positive earnings, reflective of the seasonal shifts that Carl will discuss in more detail. Additionally, our outlook also reflects a year-over-year currency headwind of about 7 cents per share and dials in a full-year base tax rate of about 22%, lower than our previous assumption of 23% to 24%. In closing, we have delivered strong results in the quarter and for the year. We will overcome more than 80 cents of headwinds due to performance chemicals earnings and currency. Our teams continue to execute well against our plans, and we continue to create increased value for our shareholders. In the coming months, we expect to deliver a strong finish to the year. With that, I'll turn it back over to Carl.
Thanks, Nick. I'd like to now provide some brief segment insights. As a reminder, the slides and the complete segment commentary are posted on the Investor Center website at DuPont.com. Please turn now to slide 8, and let's begin with agriculture segment. We feel great about our results and our performance in this competitive environment. Year to date, we've grown sales 12% and operating earnings 8% over last year's strong performance. Our right product, right acre strategy in seeds and our innovation focus is delivering value to customers. In the third quarter, sales grew 15% based on strong demand for our industry-leading insecticides and higher seed revenues. Our typical seasonal loss was lower than last year, as sales growth and a gain of $26 million from the Pinar seed acquisition more than offset higher seed costs. In crop protection, third quarter sales were up 21%, with volume growth in Latin America led by strong demand for Rynaxypyr. Expectations for higher soybean hectares also drove demand for fungicides, particularly picoxystrovin. Rynaxypyr continues to perform well, and we are on pace to exceed $900 million in sales this year. Our fungicide portfolio also continues to show solid growth, with the highly successful launch of Approach, our picoxystrovin fungicide product, in the United States this year. Moving to the seed business, we had a solid start to the Latin America sales season, despite the negative impacts of currency and growers reducing corn hectares in favor of soybeans. Pricing gains were led by the continued adoption of Intrasect, our dual-mode-of-action insect-protected hybrids, which will represent about a third of our Brazil corn volume this year. Likewise, recent investments in soybeans are paying off as growers in Brazil are increasing demand for locally developed, high-yielding, high-quality Pioneer brand soybeans. The USDA did not issue an October crop report and won't issue its final 2013 acreage report until January 2014, so it's too early to be definitive about market share. However, we are pleased with the competitive performance of the Pioneer business, growing sales 11% through the first three quarters based on the strength of price gains and higher corn volumes in North America. Moving to the fourth quarter outlook for agriculture, we expect a substantial increase in sales on expectations of continued strong performance in both seeds and crop protection in Latin America. Earlier shipment of Safrinha corn seed enabled by recent investments in Brazil, an early start to North America seed shipments, and a benefit from including our Pinar acquisition. As a result of sales increases in seeds, continued growth in crop protection, and lower anticipated seed input costs for fourth quarter North American sales, we expect to achieve a small fourth quarter profit in our agriculture segment for the first time. For the full year, we now expect operating margins will be about flat, overcoming the impact of the higher seed input costs earlier in the year. Looking forward to 2014, we are watching closely corn and soybean markets and implications for the upcoming Safrinha and Northern Hemisphere planting seasons. Several important events will play out between now and when growers put seed in the ground next spring in North America. Specifically, we will see the completion of the North American harvest this year, the harvest of the summer crop in South America, and the planting of the Safrinha corn in Brazil. Turning to electronics and communications on slide 9, the demand environment strengthened versus the prior year in photovoltaics, and this was reflected in our improved results. Operating earnings increased 67%, due primarily to higher demand for our Solamet and Tedlar materials in PV. Overall, PV market fundamentals are gradually improving. Module prices have been stable due to improved utilization rates, and the settlement of trade disputes has provided a more stable environment. Global PV demand continues to be led by China, Japan, and the United States, partially offset by lower demand in Europe. While the PV market is still challenged by the weak underlying financials of many players in the industry, the long-term outlook is positive because PV prices are reaching grid parity in more of the world. Our strategy is to continue to build our position as the premier PV material supplier by stressing the importance of selecting high-value, high-efficiency materials to extend the life of PV systems, which will assist the industry in its drive towards grid parity. For our industrial biosciences segment on slide 10 this year, our sales and operating earnings have grown each quarter, and third quarter operating earnings of $45 million were up 13%. On slide 11 for nutrition and health, we continue to see strong demand for cultures and probiotics, and we delivered good results in protein solutions. Moving ahead to performance chemicals on slide 12, the 25% year-over-year TiO2 volume growth in the third quarter was another positive step in the recovery. We have now recorded three consecutive quarters of year-over-year and sequential volume growth. Additionally, all regions delivered double-digit volume improvements. Europe and Asia were particularly strong. While fourth quarter segment earnings are still expected to be modestly lower, this represents a significant improvement compared to the 51% decline we experienced through the first three quarters. We see industry fundamentals improving and our strong manufacturing technology advantages remaining intact. For performance materials on slide 13, third quarter results benefited from higher volumes in automotive, electronics, and packaging markets. Year-to-date, we have delivered three consecutive quarters of earnings growth, accompanied by increases in operating margins. Finally, in safety and protection on slide 14, we're seeing volume improvements in U.S. ballistics military protection, certain industrial segments, garments, and construction. Our targeted efforts to drive demand generation, coupled with ongoing productivity measures, are delivering results and improving our financial performance. Third quarter earnings were up 16% versus last year, and we now have delivered three consecutive quarters of operating margin growth in this segment. With that, I'll turn it back to you, Ellen.
Great. Thank you, Carl. Now I'd like to provide some insights on our earnings expectations, and I'll conclude with an update regarding the strategic evaluation of performance chemicals. As Nick highlighted, we do anticipate our full-year earnings will be about $3.85 per share. To put that in perspective, we expect to have a full-year headwind from the combined impact of lower performance chemical earnings and negative currency of more than 80 cents per share. Excluding these factors, our full-year earnings per share increase would be 24% higher than last year in a slow-growth global economy. While we maintain a cautionary macroeconomic stance, it's noteworthy to highlight that we do expect fourth quarter earnings should more than double from last year's weak results. For 2014 planning, we are now beginning our business-by-business goal setting and execution review work. Across the portfolio, we initiate this process with the macro assumption that global economies will continue to gradually improve from this year's sluggish industrial production base. To meet our future commitments, we will drive performance across the company by remaining focused on our three strategic operating priorities. They are increasing return on research and development, capitalizing on our global reach, and driving execution while delivering on our productivity commitments. First, we will deploy our science to meet today's customers' needs, build a strong and balanced pipeline of new products, and increase the return on our research and development investments. Second, we will build on our strong third quarter performance in emerging markets and capitalize on our global reach. And third, we will execute against our commitments to drive productivity and deliver cost savings that will help offset inflation and fund growth initiatives. On the innovation front, we successfully delivered 470 new products to meet customer needs in the third quarter alone. Examples of our innovation this quarter included new applications of Kevlar aramid fibers for high-strength, durable conveyor belts from Safety and Protection, new branded probiotics designed for pediatric nutrition from our Nutrition and Health segment, and new product blends of Axtra enzymes from Industrial Biosciences designed to reduce costs and improve nutrition in animal feed applications. Now turning to performance chemicals, I'd like to provide a brief update on our evaluation of strategic alternatives. Since our July announcement, we've made significant progress in our efforts to evaluate a wide range of options. Our primary objective is to identify the alternatives that create the most value for our shareholders. Comprehensive evaluations have progressed well, and we're carefully reviewing key considerations, including future cash flows, dividends, debt levels, pensions and taxes, along with a host of other key variables that we know are important to our shareholders. We are moving with a sense of urgency. In the interim, we remain focused on delivering results today. Our strategy is clear and it's working. We have created and are strengthening world-leading positions in agriculture and nutrition, bio-based industrials, and advanced materials. We've made good progress through the first three quarters despite challenging conditions and are executing successfully against our strategy. So with that, Carl, back to you.
Thanks, Ellen. Okay, let's open up the line now for your questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. If you would like to pose a question, please press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, please press the pound key. In the interest of time, management requests that you limit yourself to one question and one follow-up question. And please pick up your handset to allow optimal sound quality. If you have any additional questions, you may re-enter the queue. Our first question comes from Vincent Andrews from Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead with your question.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone. Ellen, I asked this last quarter, and maybe it was a little premature, but do you have any sense of the seed cost tailwind that you'll have in corn next year now, maybe that some of the harvest has come in, and you might have a better sense of what your cost build is going to be for next year in corn?
So, you know, seed costs for next year, we're still gathering all the data and in like that. Maybe we're getting a little better yields than we had thought, than we had last year. So we're looking, I don't know, maybe 1% type of thing with commodity prices down.
Okay. And then just as a follow-up, any sort of sense of how the pricing environment in South America is going on both the corn and soy side? Are you seeing any unusual behavior from any of your competitors or just in the market in general?
Any unusual competitive behavior. I mean, we're seeing that the economics are causing growers to really think about, you know, what they're doing, the shift from corn to soybeans, you know, in the summer, and looking at the prices on where corn is down there, what they're going to do for the Safrinha planting. So we see a little bit of a slow start to that, but I don't see anything from a competitive standpoint.
Thank you. Our next question comes from John Roberts from UBS. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, John. How are you?
Good, thank you. Yourself?
Good.
I'm interested in the European volume number because I believe TiO2 is smaller for you in Europe and electronics is smaller and ag is seasonally smaller in the third quarter. So that's probably maybe the best industrial read that you've got in terms of your volume statistics you gave. And Europe was up 10%, I think, year over year, and it was only up 5% last quarter. So could you comment on that acceleration?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, I'll separate it first. So if we were up 10%, 16% we were up in volume in developing, you know, Europe, Middle East, and Africa. Developed Europe was up 7%. Developed Europe, we benefited from improvements in TiO2, in performance materials, in industrial biosciences, and ag. So we had those four businesses, those four areas saw improvement in developed Europe. Same thing on developing Europe, more emphasis, I think, on ag and TiO2. So, you know, this is something we're watching very closely. You know, we see it progressing. You know, it had been bumping along the bottom for so long. But I think it's a real testament to our new products and product progression that we've made in agriculture and the investments we've made in developing Europe. And I think we're seeing the results of that investment.
And then just a follow-up for Nick. Nick, the tax rate for the year-to-date number is 23%. Your guidance is 22 for the full year. Why didn't you true up to 22% in the year-to-date numbers? Well,
we did, John, true up to 22%. That's what you saw in the 4-cent number there, the benefit. And what we'll now see is the fourth quarter impact of that same 22% versus last year's tax rate. You know, this is very dependent on, as you know, John, geographic mix and how the quarter actually plays out. But year-to-date last year was 23, and we are actually year-to-date last year was 24, and year-to-date this year is 23.1.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Robert Court from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead with your question.
Good morning. This is actually Neil Singani on for Bob. A question on the U.S. seed and the growth of the direct-to-farmer approach. Is that something that's going to lead to lower costs?
Oh, well, you know, we've had direct-to-farmer forever, and we've invested in it over the last few years. I think that's been that and the product progression has really enabled us to gain the share that we've gained in North America in both corn and soy. You know, we believe in that right product, right acre strategy, making sure that we are working directly with the farmer. You know, what hybrid, what seed size, get them their first choice, get it in the barn. And, you know, I think that's made us successful in that marketplace. It makes us all stickier with the farmer and really creates efficiencies in our supply chain. So it allows us to plan a lot better since we have that detailed knowledge and the mapping on those acres.
Okay, and Syngenta talked about producing too much seed this year, requiring some write-downs. Is that an industry issue, or are you all seeing something similar?
No, you know, write-downs are a normal part of the seed business. They happen every year. We've seen our seed yield this year is a little better than last year, but not hugely better. And we expect write-downs in the normal historic range. We don't see anything unusual there.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Jeff Bakakis from J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning.
Hey, Jeff.
Hi. I was wondering, Ellen, if you could review the reasons for why you're exploring strategic options for titanium dioxide for performance chemicals, why it might create value to separate the business off, and if you could also review the arguments against it, that is, why you might keep it or leave the current structure unchanged.
Well, certainly, if you think about the focus that we've had since the beginning of 2009, right, and, you know, when this leadership team came in, the global financial crisis, and I've talked about this often, is every boat on its own bottom. You know, the businesses, that's why we changed the segment reporting to get great clarity on how our ag business is doing, how our paint business is doing, how our chemicals business is doing. We established distinct goals from a growth and a margin expansion for each one of those that are on that track. We then, as we came out of the financial crisis, really took a look at how science makes a difference in creating a differentiated position in the marketplace. And clearly, as you saw with the disposition of our paint business, we really felt that there was limited opportunity for science to make a difference there, and we took the actions that we did. If you look at performance chemicals, it's a strong set of businesses, good margins. We've seen in the last year the volatility of those that set of businesses, 65 cents a share down, this year to date, I think is the number. Nick can correct me if I've got a little wrong.
Right.
And it's been a headwind this year. So you've got a commodity set of businesses. You've got volatility and low growth. So it's about a GDP kind of growth business. So the question, what role does that have in our portfolio? And that's what the board and management is discussing. And so from the positive side, it creates cash. On the negative side, it creates great volatility. And so at the end of the day, I think that we have to understand what is the best for our shareholders. How do we create the most value there?
Thank you. Our next question comes from John Carson from Susquehanna Financial. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Ellen, a question on ag. You've had, on the top line, you've had strong growth this year, I think up 12% on a year-to-date basis. If you could just give us a sense of, you know, what's price, what's volume, what currency hit you've taken, and more importantly, what's the sustainability of these gains into next year? What are your expectations, for example, on Pioneer pricing in the U.S. market?
Yeah, thanks, Don. We're making great progress in agriculture this year. You know, currency's been about a 2%, 2-point headwind of that 12. And so volume and price, it's a little more price than volume given the new products. And that product mix has really been driving our price gains. And so price is a little bit heavier than volume. But we've had strong volume progression. We are, we grew volume in North America in corn. We will have all those, we're pulling together all those numbers. If the USDA had only reported in October, we'd be in a little better position than in talking about the, the totals. But, you know, I think that we're really making, really confident in the business and really making progress. Now we're heavy into Brazil. And last year we gained 3 points of share both in summer and safrinha season in corn. We've made a lot of investments in there, in the plants and supply chain improvements down there, and I think we're going to see great progression there as well.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Kevin McCarthy from Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Yes, Ellen, just to follow up on your strategic review of performance chemicals, I think you mentioned in your prepared remark you're moving with a sense of urgency. Would you care to offer any update on timing of a decision and whether or not you've narrowed down the options in terms of whether the businesses might be separated together with each other or apart from each other and the form of possible separation if you decide to go down that path?
Yeah, so we're looking at a lot of different options. We are operating with a sense of urgency, and we want to get this done as quickly as we can.
Okay. Follow up, if I may, on ag. You mentioned on slide 8 that you anticipate an early start to North America seed shipments. It surprised me a little bit. I guess growers seem to have been getting orders in quite early the last 2 years. Do you expect it to run even earlier this year? And if so, you know, how much might be pulled from 1Q in your estimation?
I think that's a little hard to estimate right now. We do see an interest in making sure the farmers get the right hybrid, the right seed size, get their first choice, get it in their barn. And, you know, so we're seeing a little bit more activity there this year than maybe we saw last year. And, again, I think that with the, you know, the moderating commodity prices, people are very interested in understanding that they're going to get the yield that they need to make the economics work for them. You know, we're also seeing a lot of interest in Aquamax. You know, we've really increased the acres there. This year I'll be excited to see, I guess in 3 weeks, Paul Schickler will be out talking about how the season has shaped up for us. But I was out in Iowa last week and I was very, very excited to see the performance that our growers are seeing in the field. So I think there'll be good news in a few weeks.
Thank you. Our next question comes from David Begleiter from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Ellen, very good results in performance materials. First, on the top line, you mentioned China. What's driving that very strong growth in China volumes for performance materials?
Yeah, so volumes are up 18% in China, and what we're seeing that is in automotive. I mean, automotive is very strong. If the whole world in automotive is only growing 2% this year, China will be up 10%. And we're making great progress with our penetration on application development and lightweighting vehicles and the advanced plastics And even in S&P, we're seeing some uplift on the Kevlar Nomex into automotive applications. And so it's really China's a story of auto, electronics, and the industrials. And we're seeing progression there versus, this time last year was a very weak quarter.
And also in performance, very good margins as well, 22.5%. Now, where do you think margins can go, or should they be sustained here, these levels in performance materials going forward?
So, performance materials, we're seeing a lot of strength based off our packaging materials and the penetrations that we've made. We have long-term estimates that are lower than the 23% we're at now if you look at it across the entire array, but, high teens kind of thing. But, this is something that we're challenging the team to do. We're challenging the team to really understand the new products and the penetration there and what can be achieved and how differentiated we are in those markets. So I'm very excited about what the team is doing in performance materials.
Thank you. Our next question comes from P.J. Juvekar from Citi. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you and good morning. I think in your press release you mentioned about your TiO2 ore contracts. What's the timing of the flow through of these ores, and do you have any significant contracts expiring in 2013?
Nick?
Yeah, so PJ, when you look at our supply position around ore there, we have staggered contracts, so not everything expires at one time, but as those contracts have expired as of recent, and we've gone out into the marketplace, we have seen a higher cost in our ore cost as of recent, but we're still very advantaged from an ore perspective versus the competitive set, given our ability to consume the low-grade ores and produce the high-quality TiO2. So we'll continue to have that occur over time, so there'll be contracts ending as we renew others, but In a macro sense, we remain very advantaged there.
Thank you. And my second question is a follow-up on seed pricing. What kind of seed pricing do you actually achieve in Latin America this year, and what's the expectation for the U.S. season? Thank you.
So from a standpoint of seed pricing in Latin America, it's being driven by Intrasect. It's really a mix. So as we get more and more penetration on the Intrasect product into corn in Latin America, you're seeing a positive impact on price. And we're seeing at this point, it's all about yield and what the farmer can get. Intrasect, I think this year going to be probably a third of our volume and continue to make progress. In the U.S., it's a little hard to say right now. I think mix is, again, going to be a driver. And it's going to, from a product standpoint, and where farmers think they can get the best yield.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Mike Ritzenhaller from Piper Jaffray. Please go ahead.
Good morning. A couple questions on ag. Insect pressure has been high the last few seasons in Latin America. Can you elaborate a bit more on what's driving the interest in the Latin American crop chemistry piece? Overall acreage growth is up, but it doesn't seem like it's quite enough to substantiate sort of the outlook. Is it new products, or is there something more specific?
Yeah, so I think what you're seeing is the benefits that Rynaxypyr is creating around that really heavy insect pressure down in Latin America. It's phenomenally effective. It's very efficient, and it's very low toxin, very human friendly. Our team there, we kind of always question them very deeply about their revenue progression, because now we're saying that globally Rynaxypyr is going to be above $900 million in revenue in 2013, and it didn't even exist 5 years ago. And I think that's one of the really strong proof points around the power of combining, chemistry and biology, really understanding the biology of the bug and how the chemistry can create that real advantage. And, farmers are anticipating heavy pest pressure in Latin America this year, and they're taking action on it. And we're seeing that in the volume numbers in our agriculture segment.
And then, as a follow-up, Ellen, what do you see as the best way to value the ag business, or what's the best way to incorporate the value of the ag business more appropriately in DuPont's stock price?
Well, I think that, what you've seen in the last few years is tremendous performance in our ag business against our competition. We're winning in the marketplace. since 08, 10 points a share gain in beans in North America, 6 points in corn. Margin expansion. I think you've seen, if you look at our stock price over that time, I think you'll see our total TSR is, I don't know, 182% versus the S&P of I don't know what, 107. So I think we've seen, since we've created a very strong position in ag coming off of 08 to now, I think we've seen the are competing in the marketplace, are winning in the marketplace, and I think you've seen that reflected in the TSR that our shareholders have experienced since then.
Thank you. Our next question comes from John McNulty from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning. With regard to the strategic review and performance chems, I guess it looks like you and the board have really been kind of trying to figure out, does it really fit in and does it benefit the company? In this process, have you and or the board thought about other assets within the portfolio to see if they also make sense in the overall platform for DuPont?
Yeah, so we, you know, John, as you know, we've instituted in the last 4.5 years very strong portfolio analysis process with our board, with management, and with the board. We look at it every quarter from a management standpoint. We take the board through it on a consistent basis, understanding how value is derived from each one of our major product areas. You see some minor adjustments, like in crop protection, we'll sell a Mancozeb or something like that. You'll see major, like the disposition of our performance coatings, and it's a very active process. We consider the competitive environment. We consider how science can really make a difference from a competitive standpoint and win in the marketplace, because that to us is key. And I think we take that very actively, as you see from the discussion, what we announced in July, that we're looking at strategic alternatives for the performance chemicals area. And, you know, we'll conclude that.
Great. And then just as a follow-up, when you look at the major kind of geographic regions, it sounds like Europe is maybe doing a little bit better. China, I think in the opening remarks, it was indicated that that's starting to maybe reaccelerate. And yet you pulled down your kind of global industrial production forecast. So I guess where are you seeing the incremental weakness relative to some of those areas that you highlighted?
Yeah, I know. I think, well, the economists were projecting pretty aggressive industrial production for 2013, and it's turned out to be lower than that. So I guess in the beginning of the year, Nick, I don't know if you can remember, it was in the high twos.
Yeah, almost 3.
Almost 3%. Now it's
just below 2.
Just below 2. So, you know, I think that's a reflection of the global economy. We're seeing we're seeing bright spots. When you think about automotive, it's only up 2, but it's up 10 in China. It's going to be up 5, 6% in North America. So we're seeing, even though there's lower growth in automotive, we're seeing some real bright spots in a couple of the regions. I think we're seeing PV recovery coming. We've seen it a little bit this quarter. We've seen the TiO2 market stabilize, really, and kind of gone sideways a little bit right now. But so I think when you put that all up, industrial production is a little less than what we thought at the beginning of the year. But obviously, with our, you know, new products that we've introduced and our focus on the marketplace, you know, we're going to figure out, regardless of the environment, you know, focus on how we can win.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Laurence Alexander from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Two questions. First, on the nutrition and health business, can you elaborate a little bit more on what's driving the weak volume performance and when you think you'll be back to a more sustainable growth trajectory? And then on agriculture, could you give an update on the 360 program? And I think more broadly, are you seeing any evidence that data intensity or is actually driving pricing power and wallet share gains in the ag sector, or is it just one more way to maintain touch with the customer?
Yeah, so I think what you have to consider on the nutrition and health is that we shut down some assets last year in one of the product lines that were not productive. And so part of the negative volume is the fact that we actually don't sell in those low-end commodity areas anymore, so our volume's down. And as we continue to drive towards the more differentiated, you know, areas like cultures and probiotics, where we're really making great progress, especially with the startup of the plant in China. So I think there's a transition that's going on there, and that you're going to see as we come through this, and a real focus on taking those assets and making it much higher quality from that standpoint. From a Field 360, you know, the whole purpose is to drive yield improvement. And, you know, today it's a subscription base. We're working with the customer, you know, with these tools in order to be able to map and to be able to understand how they can get more from using data. As you know, data, big data is your friend, right? We've got, I think, 1.5 million acres under variable rate seeding prescriptions this spring, this past spring, and we continue to see how the data and the tools can even further enhance our historic strength in right product, right market. And so, you know, we see it as a natural progression of our go-to-market strategy. And because at the end of the day, it's all about the farmer, and that's what we're good at.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Mark Conway from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Ellen. Given the 14% volume growth in electronic and communication and the share gains that came with it, I'm wondering if you can give us a sense of what products are driving that. If I remember correctly, your PV installation expectations are lower now than they were at the beginning of the year, so I'm trying to get a sense of, you know, what the overall balance is. You picked up share of what looks like a smaller overall market.
Yeah, so the improvement year-over-year in electronics in the third quarter is driven off of PV, which is Kevlar films and Solamet metallized paste. We're also seeing some Kapton, you know, kind of improvement as you see new smartphones and things like that come out. But, it, you know, just take Solamet paste. Its sales were up 42% year-over-year, and Kevlar was up, I think, over 70% year-over-year. So, I mean, you're coming off of a real low point in the third quarter of last year. And we've been on a campaign. I think our team's done a great job in that industry focused on materials matter, that materials are a huge part of creating not only the efficiency of the cell or the module, but the lifetime of the module. And so I think we're seeing the share gain based on that. You know, Dave always says this is a lumpy market, so with him I kind of hold my breath. But I think you see the focus and the progress that's being made there.
Okay, and just to follow up, I'm trying to understand the cash flow of the Imprelis payments. If you're right about the overall $1.2 billion, if I remember correctly, the insurance is about $700, but has that already paid out or does that pay out later? I'm just trying to get a sense of what the cash flow impact might be.
Nick, why don't you take that one?
Yeah, so when you look at the cash flow thus far in the way of payments from the insurance companies, we've had our first insurance payment of $25 million. So that's all we've seen to date, and that's something that will now progress as time goes forward. You know what the accrual is to date, and you can see what we put in the press release as the ceiling.
Thank you. We now have Chris Nocella online from RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning. Nick, just sticking with cash, both your share count and cash balance moved higher in the quarter. So can you remind us how much you have left in your share repurchase program and why you aren't a little more aggressive on this front?
Well, you know, we continue to be very active in the share buyback arena. You know, we bought over $1 billion this year, and if you look back over time, over the last, let's say since fourth quarter 2010 time period, we've bought back over $2 billion, $2.3 billion worth of shares. So it's not something that we don't exercise and utilize. We have, and we will continue to do so. We have a program, an active program, where we still have $1.7 billion left available to us for share buyback. We'll continue to execute against that. As I said before, it's not a one-for-one sort of thing, but we will continue to utilize that program and continue to make sure we maintain a valid share count there.
Thank you. We have Jeffy Fisher online from Barclays. Please go ahead.
Yes, good morning.
continue to be pleasantly surprised with Rynaxypyr and how that's growing. You're now calling for that to get to $1.5 billion from 900, which is probably about 20% growth rate. Which derivatives of Rynaxypyr are going to drive that next $600 million? And then what would the incremental margins on that growth look like relative to what it's delivering today?
Yeah, I think that, you know, so Cyazypyr is just now being registered around the world, so we're going to see next year an uptake in Cyazypyr. I also think the seed treatment, Dermacor and Lumigen, are going to have tremendous additions to those. And I think the margins are going to hold. I think we're seeing equal value from the newer chemistry Cyazypyr in the seed treatment area as well. So we see it as really just a tremendous progress being made by that business.
Thank you. We have Mark Gully online from BGC Financial. Please go ahead.
Good morning. You talked about some headwinds for this year in terms of certain items. How much of a headwind will a higher tax rate possibly be in 2014 versus the 22% tax rate baseline that you're seeing for this year?
So I think it's
we haven't sized that yet, Mark, for next year on the tax rate and expectations on that. Right now we're saying, as we stated, that this year is going to be the 22%, and a lot will depend on the mix and the forecast we have from the businesses as we go through our reviews around execution and objective setting for next year within the businesses.
And secondly, you did provide some volume information with respect to the TiO2 business. I'm wondering if you can approximate the size of the price movement year to year and what it might look for in the fourth quarter.
No, price is a competitive issue in that marketplace, and so you can see from the standpoint of what our earnings have done, where price must be. But I think that's an industry issue.
Thank you. Our last question comes from Frank Mitsch from Wells Fargo Securities. Please go ahead.
Justin of the Wire. Hey, I wanted to say that I appreciate the segment commentary pages. That was very helpful.
Well, you said that last time, too. So, you know, we reinforced you by sending it out again.
I'm consistent. Keep it coming. Hey, Nick, you mentioned that the unfunded balance is going to be down about $2 to $3 billion in the fourth quarter. Assuming that the current rate assumptions hold together, you know, the pension was like 46 cents negative in 2012, 40 cents this year. What should we be thinking about ballpark for 2014?
Frank, it's too soon to talk about that piece of it because what you're talking about is the accounting side of it there, and a lot of things still have to play out by year end. I will say my guess is it's going to be lower again, but I just don't have it sized yet at this point, Frank.
Yeah,
all right,
we'll
bring
that out when we have it.
Yeah, as it gets closer to year end, Frank, I'll be able to give you a better feel on that.
All right, great. And Ellen, obviously your balance sheet is not stressed. What should we be thinking about in terms of the M&A pipeline that DuPont has, and can we see some action taking place there in the near term?
I think, Frank, we've been real consistent on how we've talked about the M&A pipeline. You know, we're looking for things either from a science or technology standpoint that really can advance the positions of where we are, and or geographic coverage like you've seen with Pinar. I mean, Pinar brought not only geographic coverage, but it brought us local genetics that we'll be able to take advantage of to continue to penetrate sub-Saharan Africa. We continue to look in areas in advanced materials, industrial biosciences, and ag. But as you know, we have a pretty high bar on what our expectations are from an M&A standpoint. So, you know, it's a very competitive market out there, and we continue to look to see how we can grow, enhance our growth and our return through M&A. And so, you know, we'll keep you posted.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.